204 DJS coming up at 2:30. Our friend Kara Spencer is going to be here talking about the, is it Millennium or Millennial Hotel?
Millennium, yeah.
Millennium.
The weeds?
Oh, that used to be a magic place. I remember the first time going there. Oh, just amazing. So it'll be nice to talk to Kara about that. Let's do some more sports. I know we talked some Cardinals with Ranji, but that was an hour ago. Whole new audience now. And then let's talk some basketball, some Blues, some City SC. It's not a great time this last week or so in St. Louis sports, but you know.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, you mentioned the Blues. They're facing they're not eliminated, but they're pretty close to it. They're facing a big uphill battle to make the playoffs, and they got Edmonton tonight, so that's not going to be any easier.
They explain what's going on? Like, hey, it's a transitional year. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we're building towards 2025.
Doug Armstrong has done a little bit of that. Like, you know, like when you look at the team, they clearly have deficiencies. They're not very strong defensively on the blue line. I mean, like with defensemen, they don't have the right mix of guys either, right? Because there's some talented guys, but they're not they're not suited for the roles you need. And you have a lot of big contracts you can't move. I mean, they're just stuck. You know, they're up near the salary cap, and most of the NHL is up near the salary cap, which means nobody really can take the players off your hands, because if they take a player that doesn't help them, what's the point? You know, the teams that do have cap space are bad teams that are rebuilding. Well, they don't want older players with years of term left on the contract. So they're just kind of stuck. And some of it is the price of trying to continue to contend right after winning a title, right? Because you got guys that get to free agency, make more money. And then you got to pick and choose. Do you pick the right guys? You know, they chose to give Colton Parayko a big deal, and they chose to let Pietrangelo walk. Clearly not the right choice based on performance, but you don't know that in advance, right? You had the chance to put Parayko and put him on, you know, put the ink to the paper before you would have had the chance with Pietrangelo getting out into free agency and actually receiving bids from everybody else. So, you know, it shows the difficulty of maintaining contention for a long period of time. Cause as guys get older, you got to make calls. You got to make difficult calls. You know, you got to let Ryan O'Reilly walk. You got to let David Backes walk. You got to let Pietrangelo walk. And at some point, when you're stuck because they don't have the big farm system because they haven't been drafting very high. I mean, drafting low in the first round. So you don't have a lot of the top prospects that they would have had, say, 10, 15 years ago.
In general, having done Sports Open Line as long as you did, are Blues fans similar to Cardinals fans in impatience or in...
I mean, they're basically the same people. You know, there are people that rank hockey above baseball, but... For the most part, they're the same group of people. And I think there's a similar mindset. I think it's a little bit... I was texting with Tom and Paul, Matt and Steve over the weekend. We have a little baseball thing that we text all the time. You like to be added, you can. But
I was going to say, boy, that sounds like a good
well,
time.
Do you want
to
get?
Like, I would love to be
do you
that
want,
text.
Do you want to get...
Boy, that sounds good.
Do you want to get 96 texts during a game?
Nope.
That's why we didn't include you. But, you know, Cardinals fans on Twitter are not okay. They're not okay. They're not handling this well. They're panicking already because it looks like last year.
Feels like we just took a few months off and right back into it.
And I get that that's how it feels, but I mean, at some point, you have to be able to, it's kind of what we were talking about a minute ago, like you got to get past what things feel like and give it time to happen. Like get yourself some measurables that can tell you the real story. And with the Blues, we have that. I mean, you're late in the season. You are right now what you are. And the only thing that can save you is a really big hot streak on your part and the team in front of you that you need to catch, which is Las Vegas. They need to finish cold. Like, you know that. It's an easier thing. With the Cardinals, I mean, you literally have 158 more games. And four games don't tell you good or bad. If they went 3-1, it didn't mean they overcame all of their problems from last year.
And,
going 1-3 doesn't mean it's a repeat of last year.
Off the air that the Padres will be a much more fair test of the Cardinals.
They're a similar team. They were a team that was really disappointing last year. They were a team that people thought was going to be really good. They made a bunch of big moves. They got Juan Soto. They did all that. And they failed. They were like the Cardinals last year. I don't know... I'm trying to remember exactly what their record was, but it was a similar situation where they were picked as a contender and, yeah, they were just over 500. So they're in the same spot in the sense that they're trying to recover from a massively disappointing year, but they've also lost Juan Soto because they had to trade him, and they lost the National League Cy Young Award winner in Blake Snell, who left the team. So, and they lost, I think, their top three starting pitchers from last year, not to mention Juan Soto. So they're much more – like this is a series you should – it should not look like the Dodgers series is what I'm saying. This should look more like two evenly matched teams. They're different strengths and weaknesses, but they should be around the same. And honestly, the Cardinals should be – I think should be better than the Padres come the end of the year.
You said that Sonny Gray will be pitching Wednesday. Is he pitching in a game AAA or is he – okay.
Yeah, he's going to pitch for Memphis on Wednesday. Keep an eye on how many pitches he throws. That'll probably be your best indicator of that. And assuming he doesn't come out of the game with a hamstring injury or something. But if you see his pitch count get into the 70s, it's a pretty good chance it seems like he would be starting his next game for the Cardinals next week. So that'll be good. Lars Nootbaar starts the rehab assignment at Memphis tomorrow, I think, because I think they're off today. So I think he's got tomorrow and Wednesday, and I guess they'll reevaluate. It might be a little close to get him there for opening day, but Nootbaar's getting close.
And I know it's very early, but you and Ronge were both saying that Arenado just looked a little weird.
He did, yeah, and it doesn't prove that anything. It's not like we're saying, you know, we're not trying to make the point that Arenado's done, he looks terrible, but it's just early, he looks lost. And that happens sometimes. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt looked lost for all of spring training, and he's crushing the ball now that you're in the regular season. These things can go in cycles. But every hitter, every guy that I've ever talked to that played in the major leagues as a hitter said the worst thing is to struggle early. Because every time you come to the plate, you look at the scoreboard, and it says you're batting 100 or you're batting zero. It's, you know, if you get off to a good start, and let's say you have a couple games where you go 4-for-9, well, now all of a sudden you're batting 450, and as it comes down, it doesn't look ridiculous.
It's like if they just carried over last year.
If they would just post your career numbers, it would probably be a little less. But they know, like, those guys, even if the numbers aren't up there, they know that they're struggling. They can feel it. And if you saw Arenado's at bat last night in the ninth inning against Daniel Hudson, I thought he was having trouble seeing. That's how bad it looked. Like, he didn't look like he saw anything. He was just, like, weird half swings and getting caught in between. And that just happens sometimes. Like, it might be the sign of a bigger problem, and it might just be that that's where he is right now, and in a week he won't be in that spot.
So tonight's a good sports night. You have women's basketball with Caitlin Clark.
Everybody's talking
Iowa
about the matchup.
Taking on LSU and Kim
Mulkey. Rematch.
She's insane.
And Angel Reese.
Yes.
Yep. They had the
Tell
big clash last year. Well, you saw Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark had the back and forth last year. LSU beat them, and Angel Reese was kind of feeding it to, and by that I mean trash talking, feeding it to Caitlin Clark during the game and at the end of the game. And people got mad at Angel Reese because they thought she was being mean. And like, you know, guys do that stuff all the time. I don't know why we got to get upset when girls do it. It's perfectly fine. You know, trash talk is trash talk. It's sports. You're allowed to do that.
Caitlin certainly does her share.
Yeah, of course she does. That's the whole point. Like, there's nothing wrong with Angel Reese being that. Even if it's more over the top, who cares? It's entertainment, and it's a sport, and they're competitors, and that's what happens. You get fired up sometimes. I mean, they're all kind of, if you guys are on, you're not on sports TikTok. I know you guys are on TikTok, but you don't get, like, I get all these great videos of, like, all the players telling stories of Larry Bird talking smack to people and Michael Jordan talking smack to people. It's normal. It's fine. It's okay. But it adds a little to tonight, right? It adds a lot to tonight when it comes to that back and forth.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Let's talk to Debbie here. Debbie on line one. Hi, Deb. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just telling the guy that it was, I thought the Cardinals played really great this last weekend, you know, excluding Arenado. Other than that, I felt like the pitching and the players were getting themselves acclimated to playing one of the best teams there is in all the leagues. And I don't feel like they did that bad, even though they lost three. But that's my opinion.
Thanks, Deb.
It's good to know that there are some Cardinals fans that are just not freaking out. Because the ones on social media are the ones freaking out. But we got to keep in mind that, you know, those are the hardcore, over-the-top, way too into it. People like me. I mean, I'm one of those people. But I tend not to be emotionally reactive early in seasons. I'm of the patient variety. But, you know, she makes a good point. If you wanted to make the optimist's argument for the Cardinals for this weekend, you were basically one bad pitch away last night from splitting the series 2-2. If John King doesn't hang a slider to Max Muncy that he hits into the right field seats, and I know you can say this in any game if this didn't happen, but you were an inning or an inning and a half away from splitting with the best team in baseball.
We didn't get blown out every time.
No, it looked, the first two games were awful. They were ugly. They battered you. You didn't hit. They did. They were hitting home runs left and right. you won a really hard-fought game on Saturday that was a back-and-forth game, and you came out in the end, and you blew a late lead on Sunday. If you're the optimist side, the argument is you were not that far away from a split against the best team in baseball.
How was the coaching? Anything stand out?
With the Cardinals?
Yes. I mean,
you know, there are a couple. There's always something that you could nitpick, especially when it comes to pitcher usage. The one thing I thought was interesting, and this wasn't really on the manager as much as it is the organization. It's just interesting to me that the big message for the offseason was we want innings from our starting pitchers, right? That's why we signed Lance Lynn. That's why they signed Kyle Gibson, who starts for the first time for the Cardinals tonight. That's what we expect out of Miles Michaelis. But then we find out after Steven Matz pitched, and he threw great. Mm-hmm. He was really good. But he came out and people were wondering, why did you go get him so early? Well, it turns out he was on a pitch limit, an 80-pitch pitch limit. Well, if your big strategy is building your rotation to get you innings, it's a little weird that one of your guys who's a veteran is on that. Now, I get why they're doing it. He's been injury-prone throughout his career, and they're trying to keep him healthy all year, and they're trying not to throw too much out there early. But again, if your strategy is we want innings from our starters, it's a weird thing to take your number four starter and have a limit on him early in the year. But I understand why. Just that's what when you're a fan listening to one message, and then you see and you're like, well, why did Marmol take him out? Why is Matz coming out of this game? He's been really good. He's had one bad batter. Why are we taking him out? Well, that's why, because he was on a limit that the organization had decided upon as a way to maximize his performance over the course of the whole season. But that also doesn't jive with this other message that we need innings from our starting pitchers.
Talk to Steve on line two. Hey, Steve, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Sir, can you tell me why Victor Scott is starting the bottom of the lineup? We've got the most exciting player in MLB right now. You cannot steal first when you got a man in front of you. So if he would bat first, he'd get a walk or a single. Within two or three pitches, he's standing on second base. Can you tell me why he started at the bottom or near the bottom?
Yeah, because he's never played in the major leagues before, and so far he's 2-for-14. So he's batting 143. You know, I mean, now, to be fair, Brendan Donovan's not hitting very well at all either. He's been terrible at the top, but Brendan Donovan has 2+ years of showing that he's a 380 on-base guy. And what you try to build a lineup to do is have the on-base guys in the very first couple of spots. So Donovan and Goldschmidt are on-base guys. Then you have guys following them, Gorman, Arenado, Contreras, that can drive in runs. That's, and we're not judging Brendan Donovan by 3 games or 4 games. If you are, you're doing it wrong. He's got 230 games as a major leaguer, something like that. And he's shown over that time that this is what he is. Victor Scott's never played. So if you think about the a thought process, Tony La Russa did this all the time too. This is not an Ollie Marmol thing. It wasn't just a Mike Matheny thing. It's not just a Mike Shildt thing. And it's not just a Cardinals thing. A lot of times they want to start new guys low to leave pressure off of them so that they don't feel like they need to do anything.
Leadoff?
Yeah, that's the idea. If he can get on base 34%
make
of the time,
happen.
If he can get on base 34% of the time, he's a future leadoff batter. Yes.
And, you know, he's fast as S.
Oh, my God.
But he's even better at getting jumps.
Oh, yeah. His speed is, like, the greatest asset. But, yes, he gets great reads off the bat. There have been a couple times where I think maybe nerves, he's gotten a little bit of a false start on some balls hit. Like, he thought they were going to be deeper, which is, by the way, the mistake you make.
Yep.
If you're going to be wrong going back because you can always come back in easier. But he's got the speed to make up for any of that. But, yeah, he's got great instincts, takes good routes, gets great jumps, and he's got 80 speed, which is as fast as you get.
223 DGS, Kara Spencer coming up at the bottom of the hour. Rach, what do you got?
Well, I have a question for you and Wheels, the dads in the room. Did you guys ever let your daughters, like, put makeup on you or play dress up or do anything like that? Did you guys ever have any activities like that?
No, but I let another dad do it once. So.
Okay. Interesting.
I really honestly don't think so. I would have been completely fine with it, but Phoebe had a Barbie head. And I think between the Barbie head and my head, she chose the right head.
Yeah, I know that I did girl dad stuff, like we did tea parties and things like that. I don't recall her ever asking to do that.
Okay.
But I would have. Well, I don't care. I mean, I'm secure. It wouldn't bother me one way or the other.
Well, The Rock is also secure and posted a photo of him and his tiny daughters, they were putting makeup on him and they put like a rainbow wig on him. And it was just like, oh, having fun with the girls. And the internet went crazy and said that he was a bad masculine role model for doing something like that. And they're calling into question his parenting skills.
I think The Rock's going to be fine.
Yeah.
The former football player turned wrestler who's jacked and known as an action star is a bad example of manhood.
I just wonder, like, how fragile your masculinity is if it's like, oh, no, eyeshadow, that's a...
That's it. My daughter made me gay.
Yes.
Thanks, Phoebe.
I want to meet one of these guys that's like, yeah, The Rock's not manly enough.
Right. What do you look like, bro? Just wondering. Just posing a question.
Yeah,
here.
That's great. That's so great.
Let's see here. I also had this study that I saw this weekend, which I thought was really interesting. Saw this on the New York Post. The headline was, "You're not just old. Music lyrics really are getting worse." So they did a study and they compared lyrics today versus like 40, 50 years ago. And lyrics today are way more repetitive, and they use statements like me and I on a much higher consistency than they did in the past. So music lyrics are actually becoming more shallow, less deep. So I thought that was very interesting, because a lot of times people are like, man, you just don't get it. You're old. You just don't get the new music. And I think that's kind of true sometimes, but the actual lyrics themselves are not passing the muster these days.
It's not by accident. The music companies are using analytics. They know what sells. I saw a guy who's in the music industry break this down for Post Malone, that part of the reason Post Malone is so popular is that he's very accessible. You can sing like Post Malone. You can sound like him. You can remember the simple lyrics. There's a very certain beats per minute. There's a pace that is appealing to people, and they know it. Like, it's not done by accident, and it's not because the songwriters are stupid. They know what sells.
Interesting.
And that was one. And they used him as an example, not because he can't do anything else, but because they know singable, repeatable, memorable is what sells records.
Where does Taylor Swift fall?
I think that Taylor Swift is an amazing songwriter. I don't think that every song she cranks out is like the ultimate song. I think she has some stinkers. And there's actually, she has a documentary called Miss Americana, and she's writing a song. And to watch the songwriting process, it's very interesting, because for the most part, it's like, wow, this woman is a genius. She really knows what she's doing. But at one point, she's just like, oh, that rhymes. Just stick that in the song. It was just interesting to see how that plays out. But no, I don't think she's that repetitive. I think she really like stands head and shoulders above a lot of her pop peers, just as far as the pure like quality of her lyrics.
Welcome back, guys. DJ Ass on KMOX. Our friend Alderman Kara Spencer is here with us. We're going to talk about several things. We're going to start with the Millennium Hotel, which is a knife through my heart. I'm old enough to remember being the Clarion and Stouffer's, and I remember the first time I went on a date there and brunch and the whole spinning top, and it was just the coolest thing that St. Louis had. Kara, good to see you again. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So tell me how you specifically became involved in this and what you're trying to do.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the Millennium Hotel has been a blight for as long as I've been in city government. So when I was elected to represent the district that includes the Millennium, reached out to St. Louis Development Corporation, SLDC, understood there had been some discussion about it in the past. And I said, look, as the elder person here who would usher this legislation through, I'm ready to take action. And SLDC has been a great partner. I mean, they've, initiated the blighting study, and they're moving forward with doing just that, putting together a redevelopment plan. And they've been communicating with the owners. I mean, this has been an ongoing issue for some time now.
Yeah. What are our options? What can we do?
Well, I mean, we have an out-of-town, out-of-country owner who has been unresponsive. We have several interested parties, folks develop, with concepts to redevelopment, willing to invest in that area. And when you have an owner that's not even coming to the table and certainly has languished in the upkeep of the building, most notably gotten a lot worse in the last couple of years. The city, has been issuing fines at the tune of like $50 a pop, which is obviously making no dent. Cities have the authority to reclaim property, through eminent domain. So that's what we're looking to do here. We're putting together a package that would allow for an authorized eminent domain alongside of a redevelopment
I think I was gone the day in law school we did eminent domain because I've never understood it. I'm like, well, it's imminent anytime now.
Around the domain.
Is it both if something is an eyesore, a blight, a danger, or it's fine, we just really need it and want it, which I guess both would be kind of true here.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, cities and other government and some even quasi-government entities like port authorities have eminent domain authority under state law. And so cities can really take back people's property. It's a very slippery slope. And I think it's a tool that we should use very, very carefully. I mean, look, when we did NGA, we just took people's homes. I mean, we were very careful about it. And, you know, under law, you have to provide the owner, you know, what the property's valued at. You know, if an owner is just sitting there trying to, you know, waiting for the property to continue to go up in value, I mean, in this case, I mean, I'm speculating here, but I think we just have somebody parking money here. And that's really not appropriate. We are not a place for you to hold your cash while the city, is suffering under your ownership.
Absolutely. And what about this, the hiring freeze? I did not know about this.
Oh, my gosh. Well, in order for our city to succeed, we have to have a flourishing downtown. And, I mean, we're seeing some, problems down here. And that's why one of the reasons why I'm pushing forward for eminent domain. You know, last year we put together a redevelopment package that included eminent domain for Railway Exchange. Mm-hmm. We're doing the same here for Millennium to kind of open the door for somebody else to come in and invest in our community. We're putting together a funding package to try to complete the investment in the convention center. That's what we were doing on Friday when this bomb got dropped on us, the Board of Aldermen, and we're trying to figure out, should we put $15 million in the convention center? And all of a sudden, we've got a hiring freeze. So we still have gotten no details about this, what this really means, but certainly it is extremely alarming, to think that the city as it's functioning right now is not going to be, hiring new folks. We are looking at a big surplus from last year because we're not operating at full capacity. Our city departments across the board are at about 70% personnel.
Yeah.
Okay, that's why we're not picking up the trash. That's why when you call 911, we're not getting the response that our residents want, need, and deserve.
Yeah.
We don't have people staffing these departments.
So in my own personal life, I'm not a hoarder. But I value objects. And so when I look around and clutter, it comes down to one thing. It's laziness. Is it similar for the city? I know there's not just one person who's like, oh, I could do that, but I'm feeling lazy today. But does it come down to the same basic kind of thing?
Okay, I totally missed the hoarder thing. Like, how was that? How was that related here?
It made analogy. Such perfect sense. Everyone else loved it.
Okay, gotcha. All right. It went right over my head.
People in their cars are like, genius. Oh, my God.
Not a hoarder, but does it come down to one thing? I mean, laziness, I think we are really asleep at the wheel here. Yeah. I mean, I think we are failing to engage in our, departments in a meaningful way and really enthuse our workforce.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to hiring, there's a lot of work we could be doing. I mean, we have had an enormous surplus, over $40 million of unspent funds from our city's budget from last year. Yeah. That is leaps and bounds above the year before.
That's not what I meant by the hoarding, but that made some sense. So that's what we're going to go with. Yeah, they're hoarding that money. No, for real. Like, I'm not the political guy here, and I don't get all into the minutiae and the X's and O's of city government. But sometimes a 30,000-foot view or the view from the bleachers can really help. And I thought this would be the salad days. Like, we're sitting on all this Rams money and federal money, and here we go. Here we friggin' go. Let's get it. And it just seems like womp, womp, womp kind of stuff.
I would agree with you. I mean, look, I mean, we're not spending those funds in the way I would, direct us. I think we have a lot of deferred maintenance, and that comes in the form of our streets, basic infrastructure needed to do basic, city services like trash trucks. We should have been using those ARPA funds to really kind of arm us with the basic, nuts and bolts that we need to do our jobs. And we, the hiring issue, and I realize we've had, the nation has seen that across the board, but 70%, I mean, We need to make working for the city of St. Louis exciting again. You know, if we're having a hard time hiring, figure out why. You know, we're a phenomenal city, and working for a government can be a great opportunity, great benefits. It's a phenomenal opportunity to make a difference in the place you live, the place you love, and a city that is pretty freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And you know what? When you say we're such a great city, it strikes me because I've been doing this for 24 years right here, and it almost is beginning to feel hollow, like someone who doesn't get asked out on many dates. And you're like, I'm awesome. I'm so awesome. I don't understand. Look at me. Look at this. And after a while, people go like, maybe losing a little weight. But that's kind of how it feels with St. Louis. It's time to stop saying what a great city we are. And it's time to just own it. It's time to just do it. Just be a great city. Stop telling everyone how great we are. Just do it.
I agree. I mean, for the record, we are a phenomenal city, and I get asked out on tons of dates. Just throwing that out.
As Kara goes, so
I
goes
think he was directing
city.
That at me.
I don't know what you were implying there, you know, but
it goes back to the
clear the record. Yeah. Anytime, anytime someone says they're not a whore,
I was considering it, but I thought she could be a hoarder. Let me just
make sure.
I have tons of objects. Tons of objects and tons of dates.
Each date brings a new object.
Oh, there you go. Well,
look, the magic eight ball. You're like, come on in.
Yeah.
Set it over there on top of the other magic eight balls. We talked a little bit off the air just about Mayor Jones and our good buddy Steve Ellman. And I know that this is part of doing politics. And it's two separate autonomous entities, but how'd it hit you?
Look, I mean, this is problematic. We need to get along as a community. We are siloed in so many different ways. I mean, within the city, all of our wards and all the, I mean, I don't even know how many elected officials we have in the city, 47 or something like that. And across the county, across the region, I mean, we are competing with each other, which is the problem. We need to be competing on the global, national scale. And in order to do that, we have to be working together. Okay.
So
you know, I don't want to live in St. Charles. No offense to anybody out there, but I choose to live in the city, but I still go out there. I still enjoy many of the things that St. Charles has to offer. They have a fabulous downtown right now. I love the bike trail, et cetera. And if we don't share and enjoy each other's company, you know, we can't work together to make this region grow again.
Yeah. That's really smart, because I hadn't thought of it in that way. We're not even competing with, like, Kansas City. We're not even grabbing Kirkwood and Chesterfield and St. Charles and
it's
saying...
It's like we were talking about earlier. It's like you're treating each other like enemies when the competition is actually outside, not inside.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And when that happens, I mean, we are the losers, collectively. And so we just have to grin and bear it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we just all came through Easter. You know, you got family, friends sometimes you don't always get along with, but you're on the same team.
All right. If you have an object for Kara, you can get a hold of her. If you're looking for a date, her dance card is full. Thank you, Kara. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much. Anytime.
I don't know what it is about this story. It grosses me out. It intrigues me. So someone took a raw hot dog and attached it to an AM radio tower that was transmitting. And so it started cooking the hot dog and it started broadcasting through the hot dog. So the top of the hot dog's doing this, ma, 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 ma.
Oh, wow.
And it's talking and it's the hot dog's talking and doing a radio show.
Interesting.
Great.
It doesn't gross me out, but I get why it would gross you out.
I don't get why you would do that.
Yeah, did they like film it and put it on YouTube or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Two guys who do, I guess, hot dog experiments on YouTube.
Hot dog pranks.
It's niche.
I'd like to introduce the newest cast member to the DGS. Doggy.
Doggy.
Here's a couple weird things. Sarah Lee. The Sarah Lee slogan. Nobody did it. Do you know what it is?
Nobody does it better?
No, it's nobody. No. I always thought it was nobody does it like Sarah Lee, but I think they say nobody doesn't like Sarah Lee.
That's exactly right. Nobody does it like Sarah Lee my whole life. This is sort of a Mandela thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Who the hell writes nobody doesn't like Sarah Lee?
I don't know. People who don't like English?
Yeah.
People who doesn't like English.
Also, am I Who didn't know that the Target logo wasn't a Target or was a Target?
Okay, is it the kind of thing where people are like, mind blown? I just looked at it for the first time.
Yes.
What did you think it was?
I just thought it was a series of concentric circles.
Well, to be fair, in like the 90s and early 2000s, they definitely focused more on the bullseye aspect of it in their advertising, and they don't really do that much anymore. But it's a literal Target. It's not that hard to figure out.
No. God. Also, it's becoming a huge trend, almost as big as weddings. It's about 50% as big as weddings, that when people get divorced, they are now signing up for online gift registries saying, I need stuff way more now because when I got married, no one took half my stuff.
Yeah, but people give you that stuff as a celebration. So unless you're celebrating your divorce,
I mean, like, you're no matter how it goes, you're dividing up assets. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That feels weird. Like, hey, this didn't work out. Give me something.
Well, it's kind of like it kind of reeks of like the whole divorce party thing, which has never been my favorite thing. I know you've talked about that in Lives, Dave. Like, you just think that's pretty tacky, but.
Yeah. So what's the ketchup thing?
Oh, so Heinz has released a statement saying that ketchup goes in the fridge, full stop. So all you freaks
after
that
it's open, it has to be?
Yeah, after you...
I struggle.
Like, it says that on the bottle, right? The
no, I struggle with what goes in the fridge. I don't care. Spencer's not listening right now.
yeah, the show's kind of gone downhill since she left.
I struggle with what goes in and what doesn't. Yeah. Only milk does.
I think I follow the rule that when it says on there, please refrigerate, I do that.
See, you're so perfect.
Oh, you actually, that's not
you
the truth.
You think you're so smart because you can read.
No, yeah. You know what really is? Because I have a really smart wife and she pays attention to those things and then I don't have to.
So yeah, that's the ketchup thing.
What would your life look like without her?
Oh my God. I would be a frat boy.
He would have one of those registries that are like, please give me stuff. I don't know what I'm
doing.
Yeah,
it would be hilarious. Would
your home be dirty?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be dirty, but it would be messy. Like laundry. I mean, I still live out of a laundry basket. I mean, let's be honest. I don't hang stuff or fold stuff. I just kind of like, it's a little wrinkly. It goes in the dryer for a few minutes. No, I mean, yeah, it would be that. I would definitely have to pay someone to like to pay my bills. Like I would ruin it.
You would pay someone to pay your bills?
I would have an accountant doing it for me, yeah, because I wouldn't be, I would screw it up.
How many bills you got, brother?
A lot. Yeah, no, not that many.
What's your beef with his bills?
Not that many.
I don't know. I just feel like if he's a single bachelor in his 50s, he shouldn't have that many bills.
I mean, but I like stuff.
I like stuff too, but it's like auto pay, man. You don't need an accountant.
You know, I don't know. I probably would have
Netflix.
I probably would have figured it out, but it would have been ugly.
What was the Trump food order thing?
Oh, let me get this pulled up. So Trump went and spent like $250 on burgers before getting on his plane over the weekend. I love stories like this. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but anytime it's like somebody ordered a ton of food and they're famous, I'm like, tell me what they got. So he ordered 18 double cheeseburgers, 10 hot dogs, 2 quarter pounder hamburgers with cheese, 20 orders of fries, and 10 onion rings. This is for his campaign, I guess.
Where's
for
he getting
his whole
hot dogs
team.
From McDonald's?
It's not from McDonald's. Oh. It's from a restaurant called All American.
Hmm.
That makes sense.
Hamburgers.
So he ordered a ton of fun stuff.